Now, there was a day when his sons and daughters, this is talking about Job, were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And there came a messenger to Job and said, "The oxen were plowing and the donkeys feeding beside them. And the Sabians fell upon them and took them and struck down the servants with the edge of the sword. And I alone have escaped you." While he was yet speaking, there came another and said, "The fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them. And I alone have escaped to tell you." While he was yet speaking, there came another and said, "The Chaldeans formed three groups and made a raid on the camels and took them and struck down the servants with the edge of the sword. And I alone have escaped to tell you." While he was yet speaking, there came another and said, "Your sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And behold, a great wind came upon the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house. And it fell upon the young people, and they are dead, and I alone have escaped to tell you." Job was living a really good life. Verse 2 of chapter 1 says, "There were born to him seven sons and three daughters." And seven, some of us would know, is, of course, it's a number of completion or complexion or perfection, as is the number of 10. So he had the perfect amount of sons, and he had the perfect amount of children. And he was also rich and famous. So Job 1 and 3 said that he possessed 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 female donkeys, and very many servants, so that this man was the greatest of all the people of the East. A good life. And then, in the blink of an eye, everything's gone. You lose your job, your house, a spouse, a child, an investment tanks. There's an accident. There's a cancer, there's a divorce, and suddenly a loved one is gone. And most of us know the awful feeling of our normal life suddenly going terribly different. Job's initial response to this in 1, 21 and 22 is very sterling. And this is what it says. And he said, "Naked I have come from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." In all this, Job did not sin or charge God with wrong. And then things get worse. So this is Job chapter 2, verses 3 to 10. "And the Lord said to Satan, 'Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man? He fears God and turns away from evil. He still holds fast his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him without reason.' Then Satan answered the Lord and said, 'Skin for skin. All that a man has he will give for his life. But stretch out your hand and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse you to your face.' And the Lord said to Satan, 'Behold, he is in your hand, only spare his life.' So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with loathsome sores from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And he took a piece of broken pottery with which to scrape himself while he sat in the ashes." Job 1, verses 6 to 12, tell us about this kind of this seemingly cosmic argument between God and Satan, where God boasts of Job's righteousness, and Satan responds, "Take away all of the good that you've done for Job, and he'll curse you to your face. He only loves you because you're the big heavenly sugar daddy." And Job is unaware of any of this going on, but what he is aware of is just when he thought things couldn't possibly get worse, they do. Now he has these terrible, ugly sores that keep him this horrific company in the midst of his excruciating poverty and pain. And again, Most of us can relate to this. This feeling of when it rains, it pours. When you don't think it possibly could get worse, it actually does. Those of us who are starting to age a little bit also can relate to issues around personal health. My mom, for the last 15 years, has dealt with these debilitating headaches, a bad back, nausea, stomach problems. In South Africa, we have a friend, she's in her early 40s. For pretty much all of her adult life, she's dealt with the debilitating effects of MS and getting worse and getting worse. And the list could go on. If we're honest, and a lot of times we never really get honest until something terrible happens to us or those that we love, it can all seem terribly unfair. If we're Christians, we get that, you know, apart from Jesus, we all deserve hell. But to me, I think part of the problem is it's like, well, that might be true, but I look around me and this person, they don't love God. They're not paying attention to God. They don't love their neighbor. They don't care about their neighbor. But they're not suffering. They're not dealing with the cancer, with the divorce, with losing a job. They seem happy, and now a close one or myself is suffering greatly. You know, I never could really relate to the book of Job until November of this last year. And to set the scene a little bit for you, I think I generally have a good life. I don't have 10 kids. But the Chinese would say that if you have a son and a daughter, that's perfection. And I'm happily married to an amazing woman. It's actually a regular occurrence to me. I'll tell somebody it's like I've married well. And if they know Joy, they'll look at me and they'll say, yeah, you really did. It's almost like I'm not really sure how you got her, but yeah, you did. I get to lead actually a thriving ministry that includes some amazing people. We don't own 7,000 sheep, but we're doing fine financially. We get to travel the world. I grew up semi-rural Oregon. I never thought I would get outside of North America, and I think I'm on country 15 or 16. In fact, what Joy didn't share, this sabbatical, the first 3 months of us, 3 months of it, thanks to the generosity of a brother-in-law, we were in France with a house that was completely paid for, and it was big with a free car, and we overlooked this kind of idyllic French village that, you know, buildings older than Napoleon and at the base of the Pyrenees Mountains. I mean, who gets to live lives like that? There was in late November, and we're finishing up our sabbatical, and one of my stated aims of my sabbatical was to get my body back to being healthy. I'd went into sabbatical mid-July, and I'd been battling issues with my hands at that time for a year and a half, and for long stretches, when I say battling issues with my hands, I couldn't even dress myself. Joy would dress me. In France, in case you're like, well, that was really amazing. Well, it was kind of cool, but basically I could eat and kind of take care of a few toiletry items, and that was it. And I had a bad knee, I had a bad right shoulder, and so my goal of my sabbatical was to be able to run again by Christmas and get my hands back. So in October, we leave France and we arrive in South Africa, where Joy is from. And I have a knee surgery, and I start to see a physical therapist, and kind of for all of my array of physical issues. And initially, everything goes as planned. My hands are recovering quickly, and the knee and shoulder are starting to get there. And then suddenly, I re-damaged my hands doing the physical therapy that was supposed to help them, and they seemed worse than ever. I discovered the surgeon And if you're a doctor, I apologize, but I don't trust doctors quite as much as I used to. But you optimistically said, yeah, you'll be running by Christmas. It's like, yeah, I don't know how you were saying that. And I kept on retweaking my shoulder. And then, like Job, things start to get worse for me. I get laryngitis right after that for 10 days. And I get tendonitis in my feet. So not only could I barely use my hands, I could barely walk, and I could barely whisper. And I soon found myself feeling more depressed than I'd ever had in my entire life. The older I get, the more I appreciate the complete honesty about the Bible, about many things. But part of that, it's the complete honesty about the challenge of being a human being on this earth. It doesn't shy away from the fact that even committed followers of Jesus sometimes suffer, and sometimes it doesn't make sense to them. And the Bible also gets humanity, that part of what it means to be human is when we face hard times, we can be all over the map emotionally. I mean, certainly Job was. The same person that says that though he slay me, I will hope in him. That's in 13:15. The same person who refuses to listen to his wife at the end of chapter 2 when she tells him to curse God and die. That same person in 19:7 accuses God of wronging him and being unjust towards him. And in chapter 30, it says, God, not only do you not listen to me when I cry out, not only do you seem very far away, but he accuses God of attacking him ruthlessly. That's, I don't know about you, but that's kind of all over the place. That's human. And Job also repeatedly yearns for this day in court with God where he gets to face God and hears these accusations and basically have God say, yeah, right, Job, you're right. I treated you unfair. So Job isn't consistent all the time, neither than we. And I think part of the issue is things just last a lot longer than we think they should. I mean, you want me to grow my character over physical issues? God, great. 6 months with my hands. You know, that's good. 6 months, you know, that's tough. That's challenging. 6 months. That's fine, but not 2 years. Well, Job, if you know the story, actually gets his day in court. Doesn't go exactly the way he thought it would. In fact, at the end of it, Job winds up repenting in dust and ashes for speaking about things that he didn't understand. Now, understand, I think it was great that Job said the things that he did. And I think the Bible does too. I think that's why we have the book of Psalms with all of its honesty. I think sometimes we need to lose arguments with God. Because we need to be honest with him and to ourselves about what is going on in our hearts. And until we do that, we can't really be honest with him. I think as Christians, sometimes there's just places we don't want to go to. There's things we don't want to face. The bleak time that I suffered was 7 weeks. And it wasn't until about week 6 that I was at a place where I could be bluntly honest with God and myself. I felt more angry at God than I'd ever felt in my life. But it wasn't until that I was at the end of my rope that I could really face what I was feeling. Because for me, as I felt like as a good Christian, you're not supposed to be that angry with God, right? But the reality was, I thought I was being greatly mistreated. And so I threw out a lot of cuss words that I don't normally use. And I had a very honest conversation with God and with myself. And I found that I related to the oldest son from the parable of the prodigal son from Luke 15. The oldest son, he tells his father, "I did all these things for you, and you didn't even give me a young goat to celebrate with my friends." And my version of it was, "God, I've been in China for 21 years, and I breathe that smoggy black air, and I've endured the concrete jungle and the persecution. And I battle health issues for 2 years, and now they get worse. That is not what I signed up for. It's not what I deserved." And from that, I also saw how desperately I don't want to make mistakes, how desperately I want to be the good son. The answer that God gives Job when they meet face to face really, in some ways, isn't an answer. Instead, God asks Job a series of questions. "Were you around when I created the universe and all of its complexity? Do you understand its complexity? Do you know how to make a sunrise, move the stars, take care of the animals on the earth? Can you make a hawk fly? Can you speak with the voice of thunder? Etc., etc." You get the point. And the answer is, of course, Job cannot do any of these things. And therefore, God isn't going to directly answer to the charge of being unfair to Job. And if I'm honest, when I read Job, I felt like he was treated at least a little unfairly by God in all that took place. I mean, at the beginning of the book of Job, God himself says Job is a righteous man. And Job's just minding his own business. And then it seems like there's this cosmic bet between God and Satan going on in the heavenlies. And then Job loses everything. And he proceeds to question and, all right, accuse God a bit. And he gets a bit of this chewing out by God. And then God won't even explain to him why it happened. That seemed a little unfair. Maybe a lot unfair. But you know, having gone through what I went through, Job makes a lot more sense to me as to why God didn't tell him why he did what he did, and why God doesn't always tell us what he does what he does. And part of the reason is sometimes God can't explain it to us because we aren't at a place to get it. And I mean, it's a simple example, but those of us who are parents, we know the experience of our 2-year-old who wants to, you know, paradise is playing on the street. You know, I don't know why, but you know, that's where the good life is. Let me play. And you tell them no, and they say why, and you realize, my daughter, I can't explain to you in a way that you're going to understand why. Or you got a grade schooler, and it's like, I really need a smartphone because everybody at my school has a smartphone. Or this movie, I hate everybody sometimes. I don't know about you. But everybody's watching this. And you say, well, actually, this isn't going to be great for you. And they say, why? I can't explain that. Or even the teenage daughter, it's like, the cute wild boy. And it's like, no, don't you dare date him. Why? I can't explain that. Some things are beyond children. And some things are beyond us. And I don't get this, but we live in a fallen world where God seems to allow our actions to have a result. Not just at an individual level, but at a macro level. And he allows their actions to affect other people. And then you throw in the idea of eternity kind of mixed in there. And absolutely, there are going to be some things that we're not going to be able to grasp or understand. And I'll tell you what, as an American male, that's hard for me. And I've changed how I see the exchanges between God and Satan in the book of Job. And rather than this great cosmic bet, to me, they convey the absolute reality that there are things going on in a spiritual level even now that we don't have a clue about. And we're not going to be able to understand. So Job isn't yanking, God isn't yanking Job's chain by not giving Job all the explanations. Instead, all he's saying is, my boy, there's just some things you can't understand. You can't understand why you can't play in the street or why certain things happen. Now, I believe that strongly. I also believe when we're really suffering, that might not be particularly comforting, true though it may be. When I was feeling at my worst, I realized that we have an advantage that Job lacked, and that's the story of Jesus. At my absolute worst, I thought of Jesus at the cross, with all of our sins on him, and we know it's not the painful death on the cross that was the even close to the worst thing. It was that his father looked at him and rejected him. And the theologians say that hell is the separation from God. And I believe, and I'm not a theologian, but I believe he experienced hell on earth. And I'd take a physical death on a cross over that any day. And he did it for one reason. He did it out of love. So I don't always understood, and in the depths, I didn't understand why. And I was angry at God. But I understood that he endured something far worse than any of us is ever going to have to suffer. And in the parlance of the young people, that he was legit. So the book of Job takes on a tough topic, suffering, and is willing to face the fact that life doesn't always appear fair. That suffering can't always be given a satisfactory logical explanation to us because we can't always understand. But there's more to that. Job also addresses a reaction to suffering, and in some ways that's even more important. If you look at Job, there's this idea of cursing God. At the beginning of the book, God praises Job. He doesn't curse me. Satan says, wheels come off in his life, he's going to curse you. And his wife tells Job, curse God and die. And how many of us know people who have seemed on fire for God, but then they suffer a terrible loss, and that's it? My son died, and I was really going for it. And God, I can't understand how you could do that and be good, and it's over. Or whatever. We know a friend in South Africa. He was actually an elder at our church, and he had this wonderful, deep relationship with God, and he could really hear from God. He actually spoke some things over Anna when we dedicated her that just nailed who she was when she was all of 2 weeks. And he was a blessing to Joy and myself and her family and to the whole church. And he and the pastor, they get in this big feud, and there's a huge split, and there's a lot of pain, and the church isn't perfect, and people say things, and there's some backstabbing, and just like there is in the world, unfortunately. And now he really doesn't want to have a lot to do with God. He got hurt too much. And maybe it's a not full-on curse to God, but it's certainly a pulling away. We know how this goes. But the example of Job is in, part of me when I read this, it's like, is Job historical? Really? I believe he is. I believe he's historical, but it's set up. It's like, he loses everything you possibly can. The finances, the family, the physicalness. Yet he stays in relationship with God. It's why I get so mad at the health and welfare guys. You make a relationship with God. It's just, well, he's gonna bless you materially, you know. Do you read the Bible? You know, it's what I want to say. That, in the midst of these terrible things, Job gets mad, he gets depressed, he gets hurt, but he stays in relationship with God. And when I was at my worst, I had this encouraging wife and I had this great South African church, but it wasn't enough. And I got to the point that all I had was God. And all I could do was hold tightly on to Him. That was it. And for Job, I think that was it too. All he had was God. And it was enough. And so part of it is, how do we hold on when it's hard? And because in this life, we aren't promised good health, good finances, or protection from pain. Or like I said, even understanding what is going on. The only promise we get is God. And that's actually a great promise. But how do we hold on to Him? And it's not like, you know, I can give you 5 points how to guarantee we hold on to God when life gets hard. But I think it would behoove us to do everything in our power to strengthen our relationship with Him. And I don't say that in a way that's out of guilt, that out of God is mean, that's out of a sense at all of earning anything. The older I get, I don't earn anything from God. But I learned that it's like when things are really hard and you lose everything, you don't want to lose God. And so right now, my brothers and sisters, right now's the time. And if God's calling you, whatever He's calling you to do, I mean, that's why I can't do the 5 points, because he treats us as individuals. But if He's nudging you, if He's saying, hey, I actually want to be closer to you. Actually, I want you to do these things, not out of religious duty, but I want your heart to be more like mine so that we can be closer. Do it. Absolutely do it. Because when times get hard, that relationship that grows, it'll stay. And because of the gospel, because of the good news, we really want that to happen. God eventually rescued me. I suffered for 7 weeks. Some people suffer a lot longer than that. My spirits returned to normal. I started to get my health back. I changed in a deep, significant way. People who know me now will say, Dave, there's a peace about you that you didn't have before. You're just a lot less angsty about life. Even in our group, we hired 3 new people to our group this past year, and that's a pretty down year for us. And there was a time that I would have been pretty down about that. And you know what? Nobody died. Nobody broke down. Nobody has cancer. It's all right. I just have a perspective on, there's just a lot of things that it's just not worth the angst anymore. Job 42:12 tells us that God blessed his latter life more than his first. All of his possessions not only get restored, but they get doubled. So now he has 14,000 sheep. And not only does that happen, he gets his 10 children again, but he gets his grandchildren and his great-grandchildren. And he lives to be 140, and you can tell, I love the numbers, but it's double the number of perfection. Now, I want to be careful because I realize on this side, that doesn't always happen. I think a lot of times in my life it has. But, you know, eventually I think a lot of us, we might get to a point where the pain of a loss or a health issue, on this side, there's not going to be restoration. But Job ends with a happy ending, because the Bible ends with a happy ending. Because for the people of God, there is always a restoration that is much more than we originally had. And I will close with the second to the last chapter of the Bible, Revelation 21, 1. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them." There's a restoration of the Garden of Eden that's even better than it was before. And they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God. And he will wipe away every tear from their eyes. And death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore. For the former things have passed away.